All right, who are you and why are you here?
My name's Steve Potts, and I'm here, well, I guess because I love bikes. And actually, this is a great place to be. It's a place of real positive energy and a lot of great ideas and a lot of people doing really great things. And it's it's all around a great thing.
Well, just right off the bat, I'm looking over your shoulder there. You got your, what is that, a suspension rack?
It's the only probably suspension rack in history.
That's pretty cool.
And what it does is it's a full suspension bike. The rear end has got 1 3/4 inch travel. It's a great cross country bike, but you can put a pack on it now, and that rack will stay. It's actually a suspension rack. It will actually keep the packs level. It'll allow the rear end to move and give you the suspension you need without the packs moving.
Sure.
So it's kind of a great cross-country travel adventure bike.
Did you think that up, or did someone want it, or happened?
Somebody wanted it, and then my friend John Castellano, the engineer, put months of work into it, and building the thing was probably harder to build than the bike, but it turned out beautiful. It was a great little experiment. The customer's going to love it.
Have you been working a lot with John recently? You have in the past and stuff. But.
Well, I've been working with John for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, and I build all of his bikes, and we've collaborated on some licensing things, and I do all the fabrication for his titanium bikes, the Silk Tie, the Silk Tie LT, which is, the Silk Tie is 1 3/4 pivotless suspension rear. The Silk Tie LT is a 3.3-inch rear suspension bike, and it's a really fun bike. And then we do the Bowtie, which is 5.5 inches of rear travel. And they're all kind of the pivotless suspension, technology.
Okay, but you're also building, classic. You got a steel bike here.
Yeah, the list of bikes I'm doing mostly are I do some road bikes still. I'm doing a ton of gravel bikes, which it'll take a 45 to 50 millimeter tire.
It's hot right now.
It's really good. Well, you know why it's hot is because there's an increased amount of cars on the road. Road riding is really fun, but it's, I think, increasingly harder to find places in urban areas to go riding. So people are wanting a road bike still, the road bike feel and the road bike, but they can just take it on their dirt road to get away from all of that. And it's sort of the evolution of the mountain bike, where we just wanted to get out into the woods and get away. And with, just more pressure on the roads, I think people are looking for bikes that can kind of have a great road bike that will carry packs and panniers, fenders, and go hammer in the dirt. It's just amazing. So I do a gravel bike, my most popular. I do a mountain bike, where we call it the trail bike. It's a 27.5 plus tire, so it's a 3-inch full tire.
Sure.
And we put pass and stow racks on it, so you can just really do a nice job. And then we build a steel gravel grinder. And then I do my 29ers, and I do the travel versions in all my bikes.
Okay.
And
let's get more technical on stuff.
You're
one of the old guard of frame building, like the Marin mountain bike types.
Yeah.
And, you've been building longer than most, and you were there for a lot of the old Marin stuff. I'm a Marin guy there now, and just I'm sort of a newer guy there. You've been there forever, but looking around your booth, your bikes look a lot more modern than most bikes teenagers are building or the kids want to build. And how do you keep kind of wanting to do this new type of stuff, like the bike that's in front of us or the suspension rack, and wanting to stay busy on that level when you could fall back a little bit more?
Well, I think a couple of things. Part of the excitement of working is actually offering products that are meaningful and helpful and will improve somebody's riding experience, to get them out there, keep them healthy, do the things they want to do. And I don't think I can ever just sit back and just do what's regular. I don't want to do what's just good enough. I don't want to do just, I make a good living doing this or what. I want to be able to really deliver the very best I can, because I basically have a short time on this earth, and I want to produce. I'm not trying to keep up with any trends. I'm trying to build what's functional and safe. And along with these new things that people are doing with bikes, who thought of riding a bike in the snow, because we didn't have tires for them and so forth?
Sure.
You need that flotation and all that. So what that does is, when you have that happening, you have new challenges. And the challenges are a lot engineering and technical. And to make that bike safe, you have to be really thinking about everything. So with these gravel bikes right now, you know, the brake loads on the disc brakes, because you can't put a fat tire on a regular caliper traditional road brake. You can only squeeze it maybe 28 millimeters. So it's a real true classic road bike. But now, if you want to get a fatter tire, you got to go to disc brakes. The disc brakes offer a new, whole new series of engineering problems because of the brake loads. So for me, my joy is staying relevant in life and paying attention and doing the very best I can at making really great products that people are going to get on and go, I love this bike. This bike right here next to you, I started making these steel trail bikes. We call them trail camper bikes.
Sure.
Well, you can see it doesn't have a fancy, it's got my Type 2 Plus on it. It's a rigid bike and it's got the racks on it. But guys jump on this bike and it becomes their favorite bike. They have so much fun on them. One of the reasons I made this bike is because the whole thought of, you know, people work really hard in their lives and they go, hey, we're planning a bike trip. We're going to save up and we're going to go to, you know, this place and that place, and we're going to take the train and we're going to make a big deal about it. Well, nowadays it's really hard to make a big deal about it because it's super expensive. Traveling in a plane with the bike is a total pain in the ass and it's completely expensive. And so people are finding more joy in saying, hey, Friday evening, we're going to hop on, we're putting our racks on the bike, or we just leave them on, and we're going to zip a sleeping bag to it and a little pack of food in the front and my fly rod, and we're going to ride 12 miles up the lake and we're going to camp out. And that's, and so what it does is,
so you think people are being more local because
more local, and it actually makes more sense, because instead of waiting for summertime to get your big fix in, you can go have an adventure every Friday evening instead of doing something silly. You can get on your bike with your friends or your family and say, hey, we're going to go camping at the lake and we're going to bring our four-piece fly rod.
And it's 5 miles from home. You can always go home.
And you can just do it.
Yeah.
You know, and you can set up your little tent. And, you know, and with between a couple of guys, you can bring everything you need with a Coleman stove if you want, you know. And, you know, you go ride 10, 12, 20 miles, and depending on what you want to do. Or you can drive, you know, to your favorite place that's 20 miles away, not make a big deal about it. And you can go and enjoy life and refresh yourself. And next week at work, you'll work harder and be better off and feel better. And, mm-hmm. you know, to me, it's just an absolute mental state.
Yeah.
And so the bikes I'm building, like the gravel grinder, that one right behind you, I'm doing a steel version, that red one.
Yep.
That thing has got rack and fender. You could commute on that. You can go on a bike adventure trip. You can put packs and panniers on it front and rear. And you can use it as your road bike ride to go on a Sunday morning road to the, you know, with all your roadie guys, whatever. And the thing is, it's just a functional, no nonsense bike, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're entering into a whole new era with cycling where we get these bikes like this bike right behind you. You know, these tires compared to the modern tubeless gravel type tires.
This is 30 years ago I built this.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's like we've you know, we've got brakes and tires now for these skinnier expedition type stuff that make it so that you're not by the next side of the trail changing flats all day.
Yeah.
You're actually riding.
You're riding.
Or, you know, instead of going down the hill and there's a little bit of mud and you can't stop and it sucks, you're actually just kind of putting on the brakes. And, you know, technology's kind of helping.
It is.
And the market's kind of helping so that what was challenging about this back then is now, from a consumer perspective,
it's all doable.
It's all doable and nice now, and it's not a hassle.
It is,
yeah.
And you know, my son asked me a question about being remaining relevant, and I said, Daniel, that's my son Daniel, and I said, Daniel, if we can make a part, like we're making our new titanium gravel fork, you know, people are going to look at that, they're going to want to make it. I said, but if we put our energy into this to making it the simplest, most efficient way, and it performs and it's safe and reliable, nobody can beat us.
Yeah, it's good engineering.
It is. Yeah. And it's like, you know, they can come up with something, but they're going to have to come up with something different. And if you've already fulfilled all the elements of it being clean, simple, functional, and safe, what are they going to do? Make it look a little different? And then they're going to have to go around the safe, functional...
Well, with, like, my bikes on my seat tubes, you know, pretty soon everybody's seat tube is going to look like my bike because I figured that one out.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can do whatever way you want now, but you're going to end up looking like mine.
Yeah.
And that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah.
Is Daniel... Do you work with him mostly?
Yeah, he's getting his engineering degree. He graduates in May in Chico. He's their top student up there.
But has he been working with you? Like, do you get help? Is it all you? Or who's in your shop?
When he comes home from break, he walks in that door and he literally turns everything into gold.
Uh-huh.
He's redoing my email systems, my spreadsheets. He's teaching me SolidWorks.
And he's an engineering student, so he's learning all the skills that you need to back
up. He's so good. And he's like, and he's been so respectful. He's like, Dad, instead of saying, Dad, you got to do this, he says, Dad, I just had a thought, and you might want to think about it for a little bit, because I'm hard to change.
Yeah, yeah.
And he lays out his idea, and I have to say I've agreed with him 100%. He came in one day, he says, Dad, we got to get rid of your old school desk. He says, I'm going to build you this weekend a new desk all the way across the whole thing, and it's going to carry your printer, your computer, your everything. He comes in, and he freaking whips it out.
That's cool.
And he's teaching me how to do spreadsheets and Gantt charts, SolidWorks. He's doing all the finite analysis. And we're moving our business from Petaluma next month up to...
Oh, I thought you were in Point Reyes Station.
Well, we moved from Point Reyes to Petaluma to think we could afford it, and that lasted about 5 minutes, so we're moving up north.
And for cheaper rent.
Well, we bought a place, and we're going to try to get our overhead way down. I have reduced my overhead 75%.
Because you were working as an arborist or milling?
No, I've always done that. I've been a sawyer for my 25 years.
Sawyer, is that a mill?
I do mill, right? Yeah, miller.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And that's still an occupation?
Well, I do it only enough for family and friends because it got huge. I did the Golden Gate Bridge and the Land's End Visitor Center, and
sure.
I was milling, you know.
Is it all exotic cuts? And
no.
Like that,
it's just a lot of milling. Like, I did 7.5 semi-truck loads for the Golden Gate Bridge District,
right, okay,
for their 75th anniversary.
Sure.
And I thought, and what I did is I had my knee replaced, and I told all my customers, I said, this winter I'm not milling because it's a dangerous time to mill. And when I did that, I wanted to really refocus on this to get it moving because Daniel was becoming more available.
Yeah.
And they're all growing up, you know, they're young men now. And so I do that now, just like I'll build my house with my own milled lumber. And you know, I can't keep everything going, but my bike's 100% primary.
Okay, so your bike's your main thing right now.
Yeah.
You're all about it.
Yeah.
And your son, he's helping out now. He's about to graduate.
Oh, so the story is,
okay,
so he said, Dad, I need to make money, and I know you're going to move. He says, so here's what I think I'm doing. I'm going to go out and get a job. He's already getting a bunch of job offers. I'm going to go make some money for a year or two, and you're going to have time to get settled in and reset up, and we'll make a business plan. He says, but I don't want to put pressure on you to, because he needs to make money.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Because he's just saying, Dad, I want you to take your time, get your stuff moved, take a little break,
figure
go fishing, and pull it together. And because moving's not fun. I just did it 2 years ago.
Well, you're a man of tools.
Yeah, I know.
Man of tools.
My God.
We know what moving means.
Yes. So here's the plan. The new plan is the 10 acres I bought, I'm building a nice barn style shop. And instead of having...
Where is it again?
In Etna.
In Etna? Where is that?
Well, it's up along the Oregon-California border in the mountains.
Okay, so up above Redding.
So way above Redding. So part of my thought was, when we moved from our house in Point Reyes, we've been there 30 years, and moving 30 years of stuff is not fun. And I thought, you know what? I could never do this to my kids again. So what I'm doing is I've unloaded almost everything except for my shop stuff.
Okay.
I got two sets of clothes, pretty much, and that's it. I don't have a bunch of stuff that I've been
saying. So your shop now is going to be tight and lean and ready to go.
Yes, and then when the
I'm
day...
I'm cleaning my shop at work right now, and I'm just being ruthless, getting rid of junk. Just, who cares if it might come in handy?
Well,
get rid of it.
Well,
it's in the way.
Part of the thing was my boys helped me move, and I could see how painful it was because they're moving 30 years of stuff. And I thought, you know, I got to prepare myself, get rid of all my junk. I'm going to leave a nice little shop probably that's paid off with a nice little fire pit and a, you know, little camping spot for the boys.
Sure.
And when I'm called to the next time in life, they'll be able to say, let's go to Dad's, and it'll be a place of being creative and good memories. And
it'll be good there.
And they won't have to clean up some rental storage place and throw all my crap out and have an auction. And I know that sounds...
a lousy feeling. No, it's just real life.
I'm just trying to plan a little bit that I would leave some... just a legacy of productiveness and inspiration. And
well, I think you've left a huge legacy in the sport of cycling. You know, you are, you know, one of the grandmasters type of thing.
Oh, thanks, Peter.
I totally think so. And it leads to my next question where, you know, you were there. Like, I live in Marin, so we get old Potts show up, right?
Yeah.
And it's always a big thing for a bike shop when an old Potts shows up,
and
it's got an LD on it or something like that, and people are like I think the story of the mill down in Mill Valley, they got one recently. Woman had a bike and she was just gonna like ride it around town as a beater, and she had no idea. And the people in the shop were like, you know, this isn't a worthless bike. This is like a legit old POTS. Like, you can't do that. Like, they helped her get on a bike, and like, we'll sell this if you want or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, you're not gonna like just lean this up against the shop when you run in type of thing.
It'll be gone.
It'll be gone, and it's too crazy, you know. Yeah. But like, say back then, you know, I wasn't in Marin. I moved to Marin when like 97.
Yeah.
Whatever that area. But let's go back to repack days. You came up and started building bikes with the WTB.
Well, I did it way before then, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But you were doing road bikes before that?
I was doing mountain bikes and road, I was doing, okay, so back...
Give me a quick, okay, quick early thing, but okay. I want to, what I wanted to lead into is, where did you come from? What was your perspective getting into it? What were you doing then? And then jump now to... How has your perspective changed looking at this, at it from the perspective of you're sitting here, you've got these state-of-the-art bikes, and how are you looking at bike design and what we're trying to do now?
Okay, that's a good question. Well, how I got started on the bike thing is interesting. I grew up as the youngest of five kids. My mom died when I was eight. I lived at the base of Mount Tam.
And which town?
Tamalpais Valley at the base of Mount Tam.
Okay.
And quite literally, Mount Tam saved my life. I mean, it was I was kind of a shy kid. I was adventurous. I liked to fish and hunt. And so I had this old bike that it was 54 pounds. I could barely.
What year are we talking?
I was a little kid. I was 64, 65,
okay.
66. So I adventured on my bike. And I will never forget the day that I was strong enough finally to get to Bolinas Ridge. And it was the first time I'd ever been there that far. And I could not wait to get home to tell my dad that I had discovered the Wild West. I literally did. And my dad would
but
take
the Bolinas Ridge, especially back then, was
beautiful.
I mean, it's gorgeous now.
And you'd see forever, and it felt like I was in Johnny Appleseed land.
Sure.
So, okay, so the bike was just a way for me to be mobile.
Were you on dirt or road to get up
there?
Oh,
dirt.
Okay.
Oh, just,
so you're taking fire roads
I couldn't. I just loved the dirt.
Sure.
And then, of course, I raced motorcycles. I was a Class C pro for 9.5 years.
Okay.
So I was a mile, half mile indoors, open motocross, all that kind of stuff.
So you know how to get around a corner?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Really fast.
Sure.
And the older I get, the faster I was.
Yeah.
So what happened was, then in high school, I had a machine shop class and welding and all that, and I would go to the dumps and buy bikes with my buddies. I'd give them a little gas money and go there, and we'd barter for bikes, frames, like Roll Fast and Schwinn's,
sure,
for like 25 or 35 cents. I think the most I ever paid for a frame at the dumps was 35 cents.
Uh-huh.
Then I'd come back to machine shop, and I'd weld up all the busted parts, braze them up.
You're brazing or stick welding?
No, brazing.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a little nice little brazing thing there. And then I would find old crummy wheels and put them on. And
these are just juvenile bikes? Like
just
Schwinn's,
like paperboy bikes.
Paperboy bikes. But like you were just
kind of
goofing
fast
around as a kid, right? You're just kind of being like, Mr. I'm doing choppers or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I love two wheels. I was a motorcycle nut, and I was like, I'm on two wheels, I'm going to go sideways. And I'd be sideways on everything.
You want to do an Evel Knievel bike
everything,
or whatever.
Everything,
sure.
I did, everything.
Okay.
And of course, when I started racing, I had to race with all my idols, and, you know. But so anyway, what happened, so that was during high school. And then right in 1979, oh, maybe 78, I started building some bikes. I just kind of knew I wanted to build bikes. And then in 1980, Joe Breeze and I grew up together.
Yeah, because that's around when Breeze is getting pretty active.
Now, Joe's father and my father built telescopes together, so we all knew each other. So I helped Joe build, and Joe and I did a trip to New Zealand on two bikes we built with Joe's house.
Sure.
And when I went there and I did that trip, I said, that's it. I'm selling everything I frickin' own, and I'm building bikes.
Uh-huh.
Because what it did to me, I went to New Zealand, and when you're on a bike, we went around both islands on the bike, and we met the most incredible people, and they invited us to their home, and you felt so vulnerable but so connected. I just went, this is too good. You could never do this in a car.
It was your ticket to adventure.
And you see the world, and people go, you know, the old Irene and Ted and Coromandel Peninsula, they were in their 80s or 90s. They kidnap us for a week, and they go, you can't go today. We've got to take you to our honeymoon beach. And so what I'm getting at is you're being vulnerable like that also opened you up to seeing wonderful things in this world.
Sure.
And I said, I'm building bikes. I don't care if I go broke.
Right.
I sold my house. I quit my sheet metal job as a sheet metal journeyman supervisor at a big sheet metal shop in San Rafael. sold my windsurfer, my truck, and everything, and I bought a mill and a lathe, and I went totally broke at $35 a month in a two-car garage building bikes, and that was 1980. So my official business started in 1980.
And what bikes were you building?
I was building, like, mountain bikes, bikes that, you know, were a version of my dump bikes, but out of all chromoly tubing. And
okay, so you're, like, doing, like...
Like mountain bikes.
Post-clunker type of mountain bike type of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it started in 1980, and then it just went from there. And then about 3 or 4 years in, Charlie and I, who grew up together, and Mark Slate started saying, hey, well, let's build some hubs. And Charlie had already been building he'd been carving out aluminum this roller cam. So we made the roller cam brakes, and we said, hey, well, let's build some for all
of
our bikes.
On a belt sander.
Yeah, so we all did that together.
Sure.
And then we started building. And then we had this little brain trust, and we actually at one time were the world's largest intellectual property rights licensor in the bike industry.
Yeah.
Trek, you know, Suntour, Finish Line,
sure.
Bell Sports, you know, the list went on.
And, oh, yeah.
And we made a lot of people a lot of money and did some wonderful things. And then we started WTB and making products for other builders, and then, you know, went from there. And then,
right.
You know, Charlie and I left WTB in 2000.
It was 2000 when you left.
And then I still, like, I love building bikes, and I'm just going to go back to what's simple and, you know, simple as in...
Because you were doing the WTB bikes.
Oh, yeah, I built all those, yeah.
And did you ever do, like, road bikes, proper road bikes,
oh,
like
yeah.
Breezehead and
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
like that?
But not for
okay.
WTB.
Right.
All we did at WT was the Bontempi and the Phoenix. I think I made...
Did you build a Trailmaster?
I built a Trailmaster, too.
That's
I built the Castellanos.
Bike.
I built all those bikes.
So good.
And I built the first 29ers for Gary Fisher, the
yeah.
ones he was like, you know, it was goofy.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of fun, and I think it took, you know, to date, I've built somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 bikes.
So you were there, most importantly, like, during the birth of mountain biking, but then also you were with the guys making parts and frames to go on them.
Yeah.
So you could really shape what it was going to be.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Pretty much done with John.
John Castellano?
Yep. We have a couple drive chains that we supplied to you.
A couple of what?
A couple of our drive chains we supplied to you. I was hoping to get some quick photos.
Okay, great. John is here somewhere.
Do you want to pause?
Ask these guys over there. No, go ahead. Okay. Ask that guy over there. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Okay, so basically, you're in a great position in a sense, especially given the time, but even now, most people would want that position.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, you're doing the hard work,
yeah.
but where if you want to, say, do a, what was it back then, a 142 millimeter rear end.
Well, we did 140s.
Yeah, that was at 140.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of which one it was.
We did.
But, like, you got to go, hey, wouldn't 140 work? And go, yeah, okay, here's a hub, here's a bike, we did it, you know? And so you got to try whatever you kind of wanted, and you were kind of clued in. And one of the things, you know, me being a Marine guy, WTB currently tends to have their finger on the pulse because they're right at the bottom of the mountain.
Yeah.
Like, you ride down Zigzag or Tenderfoot, and you're there.
Yeah.
And they have people there like Weir and Mosier and guys that everybody that works there rides and they're good riders. So they know when a product's bullshit or not.
Yeah.
And there's not too many places in the bike industry where people really are that plugged in.
Yeah.
And you were there too.
Yeah.
And doing that kind of thing and just kind of figuring out how should a mountain bike be.
Yeah. Well, so back to your question about how do I know what or how do I kind of stay relevant and all that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm starting to ride more because I got my knee replacement. You know about that.
Yep.
This is a brand new knee here.
Sure, yeah.
Oh. Anyway, so I'm riding more.
I can't
more
wait
now.
For a new back.
I know. I wait for the lobotomy, the new brain.
Oh, gosh. One that has all the memory?
Yes. So, but I just try to keep it as simple as I can. Like, the no bells and whistles. I don't have time for that.
Uh-huh.
I just want it to really be functional and
well, gimmicks
fun
get old. I mean,
they just
get tired of seeing them.
So I just, if I built straightforward, really clean, well-executed, engineered products, and, you know,
but how did your perspective, like, how was it then when you, like, say, the 140 rear end?
I think it's the same.
You're
I think
figuring all that and versus
well,
now, it's
well,
like,
well, let me tell you a little
like,
story.
Like, you changed, how have you grown? Like, yeah. like.
Oh, I've grown in just making a better product and trying to make it more efficient.
Uh-huh.
But let me tell you, I don't think my attitude has changed much because
okay.
Charlie and I were making, and Mark were doing the grease guard system.
Sure.
And we were all just hot on it. Sunder did license it.
It was a good idea.
It was great.
Especially at the time when, like, I remember with caged bottom brackets.
Oh, yeah.
If you went on a mud ride, you had to repack after the ride.
Well, yeah. And so the bottom line is, so we had a good relationship with Shimano and Sunder and all those guys. Well, the Shimano engineers came over. They come to my shop. And we were just like, he goes, why are you doing this? I said, this is what I said. I go, we just want to make bike parts that last forever.
Yeah.
And people can take care of them. He goes, why do you want to do that? I said, because we love making stuff that lasts forever. And he goes, but what about your next year's model? Don't you want them to buy new stuff?
Right.
And we said, no, we want it to last forever. And he goes, that's not a very good business plan. It's not very smart. And we went, well, we're going to do it anyway. And so my attitude has not changed. Like, there's a couple of things going on. You get this machine going, and it becomes economically driven. We're all economically driven, but to different degrees.
Right.
If you build a company that works functionally at its highest level, it means that you can change and still continue to make relevant products that are functional, and you're not just selling stuff to get the numbers up. It's like, you guys, we got to change the color of the paint. We got to do this because they're doing it. And we got to, I know it was just introduced last year, but they got a new one coming out. Right. We got to get that on there. And it's like chasing the wind.
Yeah.
And what happens, and a lot of guys are kind of forced to chase the wind because they have huge machines to feed.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're not relevant, you don't sell out your production. You're holding last year's bikes with, 500 dealers that are going to be upset, yeah, and you're going to want them to buy your new bike. So.
Sure.
So what you want to do, or what I want to do, it's kept me kind of balanced, is, first of all, I work way too much. I don't have a great business plan. My son's got a better vision.
You're a hard worker.
I am, yeah.
And Don's like that too. He works damn hard. I'm a lazy bum. It's like, I want to kick it,
but
that's my problem.
But there's a balance, and I'm trying to maintain a balance where I can maintain relevancy, but I don't have to sell fluff.
Right.
I do not want to sell bells and whistles. I want to sell solid, functional stuff that people actually recognize as being something and making their riding experience better and safer and better. I've never changed from that, you know. By the way, somebody put in one of my posts, I put something on there, I can't remember what it was, but that somebody wrote, but what would Peter Vadone say about this? Did you see that?
I don't think so.
I'm waiting for him to reply on that one.
It's on I'm known for having an opinion.
Wait, it's on the it's on the Steve Potts Bicycles Facebook.
Oh, really?
Okay, and the question was, what would Peter Vadone say about that?
Yeah.
I thought, hey, that's pretty good, and I kept looking, saying, is he going to say anything or not? I can't wait to hear what he's got to say about that one.
I try to, people think I'm negative about stuff, or that I'm a troll on some levels, but I'm looking for honest discussion.
Yeah.
I'm looking to talk about things as they are, and hurt feelings, I'm not built for that.
Yeah.
I've put a lot of work into learning about empathy.
Well,
and understanding that, I think maybe it's a autistic type tendency.
I
want to talk about something real. I don't want to talk about bullshit. I don't want to talk about colorways trending. I want to, trending for needless reasons. I want to say, is this helping? And with my bikes that I do, they're very informed by me going on rides.
Yeah.
And I think it's very, and I see a lot of bikes where I'm like, are you riding? Like, are you keeping up? Or are you trying different stuff?
Well, I bet you anything you jumped on here, you would love.
This white bike does look great, I got to admit.
But I'll tell you, the point that you're hitting on is really important, is if you're having a discussion with somebody, there's a difference between discussion and debating.
Yes.
Debating, everybody loses. Discussion is on people looking for truth. And
I like intellectual combat as well.
Okay. But what I'm getting at is, you're not really doing anybody any favors or showing them any love if you're not honest with them.
Right.
And you've got to do it gracefully.
We all have different natural graces.
Yeah.
Right?
And sometimes it's really hard to be honest and graceful.
Yeah.
But it's really important that you do.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to you don't want to just come out like a big brash jerk.
Right.
You want to say, hey, this is what I really think. And when you tell somebody what you really think, you're saying, I really care about you.
Well, that's the way I look at it, is like, when I hit a newbie with a hard question or just say no or whatever, I'm being honest and I want them, I care enough to say that type of thing. And it's like, I've kind of built an image of saying stuff versus like, I don't expect you to show up on some forum or whatever and start talking shit to some novice builder. because that's sort of not where you need to be.
I don't think I've ever responded to anything.
Sure, and that probably works for you, and you don't need to do that. Versus maybe there needs to be a place. Maybe there needs to be someone like me.
Yeah.
Someone that will say the emperor doesn't wear any clothes.
Well, usually what happens is you know, there's a lot of misinformation around stuff. But what usually happens is maybe some customer or somebody will come to my defense and say, hey, well, this is actually why he did this.
Or
people will go, oh, I wonder why he made it this way. Probably because of that. And like, I got work to do. I mean, and I, you know, and it's no offense to them. It's a good question. But so usually somebody else that knows me, like, you know, will come and say, hey, I had a minute to talk to Steve and he did it because of this. And it's an issue that you needed to address. And he's trying to address it this way.
Well, one of the points, that, like, usually I do photographs at the show here. This year I'm trying to do interviews like this, where we could, isn't that beautiful? That Le Mans paint job. It's trying to get to talking to people and your reasons and what you're trying to do and understanding people on a deeper level, a little bit less of a magazine type of thing, more builder to builder type of thing. Like, we know what we're talking about. I burn my hands on hot welds too.
Oh yeah.
You know? And
I got myself the other day.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one.
I didn't think it was going to be that bad.
That's a good one.
For years, I had a campy dropout one on my arm. Up there. Man.
I bet you intended that.
No, it wore out a little bit.
Anyway, so, I mean, this place is for it, and I'm not the best at it. But, you know, we keep trying, and we're trying to do something, right?
Yeah.
And the problem is if you make a lot of content, a lot of people are not going to like it.
Yeah.
But some people are. Might be useful, might be not, whatever. And that's a game I like to play.
Yeah.
But let's say, I'd like to keep this more about you right now.
Yeah, thanks.
And, you know, you've got your booth here. You come here every year. And you walk around, I think, a little bit more than some builders do.
Yeah.
Some builders are locked in their thing. When you're looking at other booths, what do you see some people doing that you're really liking, but that you'd never do yourself type of thing?
That's a good question. I haven't yet looked at anything at the show yet, so I don't know. I think what I focus in on is functionality and it just really well thought out. I shy away from, like I said, the bells and whistles. I mean, it's fun, and there's a creative element to it that's fun. But when I see somebody pull something off that's as simple and clean, I go, oh my God, because simple and clean is hard to do.
Sure. Oh yeah.
Excuse me. And so when I see simple and clean, I'm going, wow, that guy really thought that through. Because to get to simple and clean, you got to go through huge amounts of.
It's distilled.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. It's so hard to do.
Well, we're also in an industry where some of the smartest people of the last century have put their time and effort in.
Yeah. You know that when the bicycle came out. There were so many patents that they had to have a separate patent office for just bicycle stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
That was 1860s and
it was
stuff.
Just incredible. And excuse me, part of the joy of the show is the whole bike thing is how can we make our lives simple?
Yeah.
I mean, no, what I'm getting at is we're trying to distill this down to keeping it a bike.
Yeah.
You know, there are some new really cool technological things out, you know, all the wireless stuff and all, but I'm also a guy that wants to be able to, if I break something, I want to be able to fix it myself. I'm not much of an electronic guy, but all those things are really great and they've done a reliable job. And but I think the whole thing is just to keep the bike simple and clean and, you know, not make it, we're trying to get away from complicated things, you know, we're trying to get away from all the being available 24/7 with your cell phone and all. So, excuse me.
Let's wrap this up, but we'll end with, let's say the next few years, you got, let's say, 3 years of building type of stuff. Where are you trying to get to next with, like, say, your next bike? Is there something you feel like you're kind of missing that you just kind of want to do? Like, I'm about to do a BMX clunker type of thing, and it's kind of like a throwback, like old Marin days, but it's going to be kind of fresh and new.
Okay, so here, I think I get what you're saying. One of my dreams is a couple of things. I started making my steel bikes for two big reasons. For one, I can make more bikes with less material costs.
Sure.
And that's, for me, it feels good because I like to weld and make stuff. You know that feeling. Number two, I want to make a really good mountain or trail bike and a really good gravel type road bike that's all made out of titanium that you can beat on, pack up, frame, fork, and stem, and seat post, all titanium, dunk it in the ocean at the water, get it salty, whatever, not worry about rust and falling apart. It can get scratched up, you don't have to worry about it getting nicked or not sensitive, and just make a totally bulletproof little line of bikes, mountain, road, gravel, adventure, make them travelable, capable, like the, you know, the coupling
sure.
bikes and all, and just do a really good job. And also, to add on to that goal, is to make it at my home or my little town and do it efficiently and make it my get my manufacturing and business more in balance with what the bike's all about.
Sure.
I mean, right now I work way too much.
Right. Make your business an efficient, clean machine.
So what happens now with my high overhead is I do what's urgent and not important.
Right.
What I need to focus on is doing important things like taking care of myself better, making fixtures that help my job go easier.
Do you work with people? I used
to have 30 employees. Now it's just me. And then when my son comes, my son Daniel is like, Dad, he comes for a week and he says, Dad, I'm going to muddy these bikes for you and you can just sit down and weld and we'll get it done. And we're going to
feed the machine.
And it's really efficient and it's a joy. Yeah. And we talk and have fun and he's getting me lined up and there's some... It's more than two people working at that point.
Right.
It just multiplies the energy.
And but you could have that year round.
I could, and I probably will when it comes. One of the funnest times I ever had in my life was working with Kent Erickson.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you knew about that, but he lost one of his welders and a couple of his guys, and he called me up and said, can you come out and weld and help?
Was this back in Moot's days or before?
No, this is like 3 years ago.
Okay.
So what happened is Katie got us all lined up and took care of us. And Kent machined and mitered and cleaned, and he put bikes in front of me, and I sat down and I welded.
Right.
And Kent and I, per person, probably put up more custom tie bikes than anybody in the world.
That's funny.
I think we made, in 21 days, we made 36 bikes.
Right.
All custom, full suspension, the works, you know.
From a factory.
Yeah, and we had fun, and Kent says, why do you work so hard? He goes, I've never worked with somebody that hard. I said, because I own my own business. We just got to get it done. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
And he liked that he could talk to me about, like, hey, could you try it this way? And I'd say, sure, let's go. And we'd talk about why, and I'd say, it makes sense, let's do it. And so our relationship was, like, we just cranked.
Yeah.
And we had fun. And we worked really hard. And we made a lot of people happy. And
cool.
And I enjoy that kind of energy. And, you know, it's very hard to find the right people to work with. Because people bring their entire life to work, their entire attitude. And I had a little helper with me, and we were talking about a couple things, and I asked him to do things, and I gave him instructions, and he's got some math problems, I think, which also interpolates into him being able to take instructions properly. Wonderful kid. I absolutely love him.
We are now collecting bikes for the best city bike category and best finish.
Okay, so anyway, and he did something and he skipped a bunch of stuff. And I said, you know, I want to talk to you. I said, first of all, I'm not mad at you. And I said, it wouldn't be honest for me to help you become a better worker if I didn't tell you this.
Sure.
I said, in a lot of other places, if you were working, they wouldn't make it a big deal. You'd just be losing your job.
Right.
I said, I don't do things here to be just good enough.
Right.
People expect me to be the best at what I do. And it doesn't matter if you're sweeping the floor, cleaning the bathroom, sanding a tube, polishing a bike, or packing the bike. We're, you know, wrapping it up. I said, if we're not going to do all of those things all the time to our best ability, where are you going to pick and choose and drop the ball?
Yeah.
I go, and that extends into your relationships with your siblings, your father, your mother, your wife, your children. I go, if you're not going to give everything 100%, how are you going to make it through life?
Yeah.
What, are you going to let somebody else clean up after you?
I call it the rigor.
The rigor? Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
You know, you do stuff, you do it all the way, you do it right, and you...
And you man up and you wash your hands and clean yourself off when you're done and you keep moving on.
Right.
And he just didn't, it was too hard to do certain things. I said, but I asked you, he goes, well, hey, I know. I said, well, I'm not going to ask you why you didn't do it, but you didn't do it. And what it does for me, I'm just going to tell you what it does. When I think about elevating you in the company to teach you new tasks, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
Because you can't even get this one right.
Right.
And I said, again, I'm not mad at you. I'm just going to be honest with you, is that if you can't do the simpler jobs absolutely the way I want them and do them right, how can I move you up?
Yeah.
And
we build on successes, not on failures.
Well, yeah, and we do have to fail.
We have to fail, but the thing is...
but you don't want to keep doing the same failure over and over again.
Well, that means you're not learning.
Right. And I said, and that translates into your relationships.
Sure.
If you're not going to give your relationship 100%, how are you going to be successful in that? How are you going to be a good dad? How are you going to be a good husband? It's like, you know, get in there and get the job done.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to be here, that's okay. You don't have to be. No.
Yeah. You don't have to do anything.
Nothing.
So all this is just very intentional.
Yeah.
You're just going to be the best.
Yeah.
The best you can be.
Yeah.
And...
Okay, like for my C2 colors. I machine parts of the C2 prowlers. They're inside the bike. You can't see them.
Yeah. Is it an internal sleeve or?
It's an internal sleeve and it's tapered on the inside. Uh-huh. And the taper does remove some weight, but also breaks up the straight line concentration because those things take a huge pounding.
Yeah.
I don't have to do it. They probably never ever break. They'd be good enough. But even the things that people can't see, I do them because it's the right way to do it.
Yeah, you should see me draw on a bike. I'll have that. I don't have to do it for money, so I can.
Yeah.
I like to savor it. It's my craft. I love it. And I'll sit there with a drawing in front of me for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Kind of nudging millimeters around.
I know.
I'm too much of a perfectionist. You remember, what's his name that did the custom motorcycles? He was in San Francisco. He moved up to Windsor.
Cosman?
Yeah, Stacy Cosman.
Okay.
Stacy, right? No.
Cosman. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Know, yeah.
So, I do a lot of motorcycle stuff too, and I went up to visit him, and I spent the day with him. It's really cool, and we had a real connection. It was cool, and he told me, he's like, you know what your problem is? You're a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And you can't get anything done when you're a perfectionist.
There's a balance that you need.
It's a balance.
Yeah, it is balance.
And it's like you have to be really good. You know, like you're saying, it's like you're chamfering inside of there because it matters. Almost more to you than it does in real life, right?
It does, yeah.
And it's something that you do, and if you were going to, like, scale this up to 500,000 units a month, you wouldn't do that because it costs an extra 2 seconds or whatever. But he's like, you're a perfectionist, and it's like, being a perfectionist, it all works great on paper, but you never get anything done.
Yeah.
And
I'm in that world where
You have to know what to give up.
Yeah.
So that you can keep moving forward. And I took those words to heart. I'm still a perfectionist on certain things.
I am too, yeah.
Because I'm just enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, state of California pays my rent.
I know.
But like, you know, this I do for fun. So I get to be the perfectionist. I get to spend 2 weeks on a print. But I'll do that. I'll nudge things around.
Hey, so do me a favor. Go on the old Steve Potts Bicycles Facebook and just hit the photos.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see some really old racing photos of me that you'd enjoy.
Motorcycle.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And it's kind of cool. It goes back 45 years.
Yeah.
But the reason I wanted to share that with you is because I think it'd give you a little history and a little, you know.
Yeah, it's cool to see that in like Mert, where you were with Mert.
Mert and I, we were at the mile together. We were sitting next to each other at
the mile.
Mert's an old friend, and I raced with Mert.
And there's Salvesberg.
Yeah.
Granted, he wasn't back in that era. But, you know, that whole primordial mountain bike era.
Oh, yeah.
Where all you guys that rode the motorcycles or were into motorcycles.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of stirred this pot. Making mountain bikes come up.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of interesting whenever I hear about it.
Yeah.
And seeing and hearing about what you were doing or Mert was doing or whoever.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, because I love motorcycles. I think they're great. Have you seen the electric board tracker his name has over there?
Kevin Ostrom or what?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, Kevin drove me out here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he
saved
my butt.
So you got to talk about it for a while.
Oh, he's a good guy.
I interviewed him already. We had a good interview. It was interesting. I didn't know what to think going into it.
Yeah.
Like, he knows me on Facebook and stuff, and I see some of what he does. His stuff's very different than what I'm into.
Yeah.
But we had a talk, and we made a good interview out of it because... Yeah. It was a lot of it was about what he's trying to do. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm trying to focus on.
He's a really nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's wrap this up. I appreciate the talk.
Hey, thanks, man.
All
I appreciate it. Thanks,
cool.
Bear. Hey, I'm staying in touch and let me know how that.